episode 4 has to do with the attempted coup of Franklin Delano Roosevelt in 1934. But before we can begin you with the experiment into that bit of history, we take you further back into 1914, when a wrong turn resulted in the First World War, and which was to have been the war that ended all wars. The events that occurred in 1934 with the attempted overthrow of FDR, the elected president of the United States, actually came about because of World War I. So, how this all happened, really, it was just a quirk of fate. A fate, as I had mentioned in previous episodes before, fate is where you choose the wrong path, whereas destiny is, there is no other way that it could have come out. So we're talking about the Royal Archduke France Ferdinand of Austria-Hungary throne. Him and his wife, Sophie Chotek, who was a Bosnian Serb, went to visit Sarajevo. And they had their car, they were going to ride in their car with their driver, Leopold. And Leopold was fortunate enough initially, as they were making their way down through the streets of Sarajevo, out of the corner of his eye, he saw that a small bomb was being hurled at the open car. So Leopold stepped on the gas.
Hi, I'm Coral Gregory, and I'd like to tell you that truth is always stranger than fiction, and history is written by the winners. Don't forget all those who lost the fight, yet were proven right. This is an endless journey, and we're running out of time. Join us in the experiment to a new awakening. Get ready for your tomorrow today. And now, welcome to the experiment, where you will be taken to where it all began. Come along for the adventure and the thrill. It's not for the faint of heart. Your reality just may be shattered. Live and learn as we head down the path of freedom that is true. The truth may not set you free, but at least you'll know who your captors are. And now, my husband, your host, David Gregory.
Take the first step on a journey for truth. It may change your perception of reality and bring a better understanding of the real events that led us to where we stand now. Come along for the ride. You may never want to return. CIA, UFOs, JFK, Sumerians, Earth Chronicles, Anunnaki, Nibiru, affairs of the gods with small g, and men running out of time. It is what it is, was what it was. It's a new day, screw it, grab the moment, and ponder tomorrow before you become another piece of the puzzle. So when he floored the automobile, the open car, Leopold was able to outrun the thrown small hand grenade type explosive, and the Archduke and his wife made it safely to their meeting. upon entering the meeting and having a good encounter with the leaders of Sarajevo, the Duke was getting ready to leave, and the Sarajevo representatives all said that they'd like to show him the rest of the capital on a tour. But the Duke, unfortunately, this is where fate stepped in. The Duke said no, he'd rather go back to the area where the bomb had been thrown to check on the people that were there and to see how badly they may have gotten hurt. So subsequently, Leopold, the driver, taking them back to that area where the hand grenade was thrown at them. I'm referring to it in modern day terminology, World War II terminology. The explosive, and they were saved by his quick action. On the way back, he lost his way. He did not find the exact route they were on, made a wrong turn, and ended up going past the bar where all the people who wanted to rebel against the Austrian-Hungary Empire and make their own Serb Slavic nation. They were there. They saw the car come back. Can you believe what they must have thought? What is going? This must be a present from our God, because how to have escaped an assassination attempt, and now they're back here, and amongst our midst. So one young Serb, 18, 19-year-old, runs out with a handgun, and he shoots the Archduke in the neck, and then he shoots his wife in the stomach. And the Archduke and the wife, they were attractive people. Archduke had a big old mustache at that time, but that his wife was very pretty. If you were to look at his wife today, I mean, she was smiling in one of the pictures. She was a beautiful woman. She was shot in her stomach, and she was killed. They both died within an hour. So that fate of taking that wrong turn, not just by the Archduke, but by his driver, led to this consequence. A tremendous amount of countries, nations, at least 100 or so. And when you think that some of these nations were across the sea, and small nation, Haiti, I think Haiti was one of them. New Guinea was one of them. Over 100 nations, countries around the world agreed to be on the side prior to this incident of one or the other opposition who were fighting the war. So it turned out to be and pretty much the terminology for today in our military, and when pretty much it was a clusterfuck situation where there would be no ultimate winners. But back to the story where Leopold, the driver for Ferdinand, was able to avoid that bomb that was coming be hurled at him by someone in the crowd. Leopold happened to see it out of the corner of his eye, stepped on the gas, and the car zoomed safely past the area where the bomb landed. There were some people there, though, that weren't so lucky. But Leopold got the Archduke and his wife to the meeting on time, where they had their meeting, little soiree, and they came out, and they were supposed to go. They wanted to look at the rest of the capital of Serbia. At least the people who had invited them. Was, World War I began in 1914 and lasted for 4 years, killing over 16 to 17 million people. At the end of the war, Germany surrendered, and the Treaty of Versailles was to have which was authored by the Dulles brothers, which later became known in Washington, D.C. as John Foster Dulles was the Secretary of State, I believe, for President Eisenhower. And Alan Douglas was the head of the organization the OOS, which became the CIA. And he was the head of the CIA. John Foster died in 1959. Anyway, the treaty that they wrote up required a tremendous amount of reparations from Germany. A great amount of money, which would probably equals about $200-300 billion in today's value money. And Germany had no hope of ever being able to pay that off. I mean, their currency had no value, and the only way that they could ever get out of the throngs of this tremendous money-starved economy was would have had to have been from outside eventually, and this is what precipitated the Second World War. Now we shall come back to the plot to overthrow Franklin Roosevelt in 1934 by a group of individuals who made up the American Liberty League. Most Americans even today would recognize the names that were involved in this. You had the Birdseye, you had the Remingtons, you have Standard Oil, which became Exxon and Mobil. You had the Rockefellers. You had Prescott Bush. And the list goes on and on, because these corporations were more afraid of the American people than they were of having a fascist government. The plot goal is to get Major General Smigley Butler retired, the most decorated Marine in Marine history, to lead a band of World War I veterans to overthrow the White House. But we jumped the gun a little bit. Let's tell you why they believe that this would be possible. When the soldiers of American troops from the First World War were mustered out, they were all given $60 to head back home. And when they got back home, Congress had passed a law saying between the years of 1925, they got back home, probably in 1919, and the Congress said, well, we're going to give you a bonus. We're going to call it a bonus for being over there and fighting. And we're going to give it to you somewhere between the years 1925 and 1945. And as we know today, getting Congress to do anything in a timely fashion is not very, very expedient in of itself. So therefore, these troops knew that back then too, and 20,000 or more troops marched on Washington, D.C., set up camps in a park. Some of them had their families with them. And over Herbert Hoover, there's some accounts that Hoover didn't want them run out of the park. And there's some accounts that say that he did. He ordered it. I don't know which one is the actual right one. But nevertheless, Douglas MacArthur, the General Douglas MacArthur, decided that he was going to do it. Apparently, he was going to hold fort. So they set fire to this shanty town of World War One veterans. And a lot of them got killed. Their families got killed. I don't have the exact number, but needless to say, this was quite the probably the big impetus that would put the idea that the corporate America get overthrow the future president Roosevelt, who defeated Hoover in the next election in 32 quite easily, that they could plot to overthrow Roosevelt. And their main reasons for plotting to overthrow him are basically they thought he abandoned his class. His family was rich like all of theirs. His family had historical wealth like most of theirs. But more importantly, they considered him, some of them considered his friend, their friend, as much as rich people can be friends with each other. And they felt betrayed. But the reason they felt betrayed is the new programs that President Roosevelt was trying to implement in order to get the United States and the world out of the Great Depression, which began in 1929 with the crash of Wall Street. So President Roosevelt actually changed the tax codes, making it much more difficult for the upper echelon to make their millions of dollars. And he also, something that really irritated them, he took the dollar, American dollar, off the gold standard. This is something that just made the cabal, all of their jaws dropped at the same time. So my listeners, my presentation seems a little out of the ordinary. It is. I mean, I'm doing this conversationally, and I want to let you know that I sometimes get called out of the room. I had to take the dog for a walk, and to actually get back to the exact spot where I was speaking, and you probably can hear the dog in the background. It doesn't quite mesh up. I try to, when I'm editing it, I try to get back to the right spot. But we never know quite for sure, so we're going to come up with a new way to do this. So we don't have so many, well, I'll always have the interruptions for personally, but we'll try to make it more fluid as we progress. But getting back to the... we were talking about the American Liberty League, and we were talking about the names. You mentioned one that I remembered when I was walking the dog is Colgate. These are all, as I mentioned before, brand names of products that most Americans have used for years. Some of the items that they used to sell are now taken over by other companies. I know Colgate toothpaste is actually... I believe it's manufactured in Mexico now. There's a bunch of toilet articles and toothpaste and the like that you can get at the Dollar Tree for a buck. And most of those, they're all from Mexico. And one company makes Colgate, Ultra Bright, out of Mexico. So we usually get our toothpaste there as a way, a point of interest. We always like to let you know where you can get the best deal. Having my morning sip of second cup of coffee. But anyway, this cabal of rich people, wealthy, as I said before, they don't trust the American people. And this has to relate to our initial beginnings, but it has to relate to labor unions and the like. And labor unions is a legal name for most things that the mob has taken over. So I don't really think it's fair to say the people per se as much as the mob per se. People need fair wages. And back to the plot to get Roosevelt out of office. What happened was, after the veterans were rustled out of the parks in Washington, D.C., with many getting killed, they approached, two guys approached General Smigley Butler with a proposition. One was named Bill Dole, and the other one's last name was McGuire. As they related their tale to him, he listened attentively, and that their first subterfuge with him was that they approached him to actually try to get. They said they wanted to invite him to the chapter of the local American Legion, because they felt the officials of the local American Legion, the people that ran it, were perhaps not on the up and up, and they wanted a change. And the general, being a supporter of all the veterans wholeheartedly, he felt the veterans had been misused and slighted by the government, and he listened to their spiel. But initially, he didn't respond to any of it. He just let it go. He took it into account, and this is over a period of months. Finally, McGuire came back on his own and opened up more so, and he told, he said he represented this group of basically the group from the American Liberty Union, and he said that they were afraid that FDR betrayed his class. He set up the dollar was no longer going to be backed by gold. Of course, he did that to prevent a run-on with the banks to actually drain, to keep this, to stabilize the economy. Also, created tax laws that were not beneficial to the corporations. So, they said what they would like to do. They asked Butler if he would lead. They were going to organize, and they knew that with him at the head, they could organize a 500,000 man army to march upon Washington with him as leader. They said that they would keep Roosevelt as a figurehead, and that he would become the Secretary General, in effect being the leader of the country with them in the background pulling his strings. They didn't, of course, say that to him directly, but that was their intent, because they knew he had the ability with him being renowned with the veterans. So they seeked him to become this man who they could rally the troops behind him. Well, Butler didn't really respond too much at the time. He took it all in, and he may have feigned a little bit of interest, but to keep it going, he did, actually. But after he left McGuire, he realized the seriousness of this plot, and he thought he'd better get someone who could verify what's going on, a witness to their little plan, huge plan, in fact. So he got a reporter from the Philadelphia newspaper, and I think his last name was French, and he was a younger guy, and him and Butler got along pretty good. Butler explained what they were trying to do, and he wanted this reporter to interview or be there, so when McGuire came back again and reiterated the plan, the reporter would be the witness that could corroborate his own account of what was transpiring. Well, they did come back. The reporter heard it. The reporter acted like he was really enthused with the idea. And now we jump ahead, because this plan was going to be going through, and the next stop, instead of rallying the troops around General Butler, the general let the American people and Congress know what was going on. Newspaper articles were written first by the Philadelphia paper, and there was a lot of trash talk in the papers because of the names that were attached to this plot. And of course, they poo-ha-ha'd most of the account in the paper, saying it wasn't verifiable. There was no evidence. And thus, he went to the House Committee on American Activities, which was set up and run by McCormick and Denson. And interesting side note on that, back after Richard Nixon and was out of office and Gerald Ford took up office, before he became vice president, though, broke up that committee. So that committee no longer exists. So that's an interesting side note. Now you can see how all of this subterfuge is in constant play throughout our history. So they took up back to the committee and Butler talking. And they said, well, their first reading said, well, we don't really have enough evidence to call any of these people you mentioned into the Senate. And I guess it was the Senate, the Senate Subcommittee on American Activity. Or it could have been the House. Either way, they didn't have enough. Yeah, it was McCormick came to be the Speaker of the House later, so it was the House. And they said, we don't have enough. And the initial hearing said, we don't have enough to call any of these influential people to come and speak. And a year or so passed on, and the final conclusion is the committee, yes, we do have evidence that corroborates what the general has said. This evidence is, it was in the form of postcards and letters written by McGuire, because he had gone overseas to Europe to check out these countries that have been being run by fascist dictators. One of the ones he checked out was Italy, of course, being run by Mussolini, and another one was Hitler was on the rise, and he checked out the black shirts of Hitler, and even France had their own version of a fascist leader and a group of people. In the French term, I can't remember, but the English translation, something to the effect of the Loyal Order of Fire, something of that nature. And he said they all seem to, these countries are doing well, business was doing well. In fact, Germany's, they could get their trains running on time, and everything was flourishing. So, now we're leading up. This, you have to remember, we're leading up. This, these people are just coming into power in Europe, into these fascist, and making a fascist leaders out of all of these. But they were emerging, and they still had a long ways to go. But the way they got there, I mean, Hitler didn't. Hitler improved Germany tremendously, right? Well, it wasn't Hitler. It was these corporate cabals from the United States that were investing in Germany. They were funneling money to the German leaders. They were building up, they built preceding the Second World War. All this money was going into Germany for manufacturing. This money to build up the country after the war. What we're speaking of here is what Eisenhower, this is the beginning of the military-industrial complex that Eisenhower warned Kennedy about when Kennedy won election in 1960. In his farewell address, Eisenhower warned on a public address to the nation, beware of the military-industrial complex. This complex started pre-World War II. They were in there uplifting the countries that had been bombed to almost out of existence. The thing is, this call to arms, and this is all part of the Marshall Plan to rebuild Europe too, but they used it not only to rebuild Europe, but to put the fascists in power. So they, and one of the things they had going was a throughway and the, called the Autobahn. They built that way back before the Second World War, the superhighway, like turnpikes. And Henry Ford was a big supporter of Hitler. Henry Ford was anti-Semitic. And he, every Model T Ford that went out of his plant had literature in a glove box stating just that fact. In fact, Henry Ford was called to Germany to receive one of German Hitler's highest honors. So that's something you don't hear about too often. So this cabal of friends were behind this, and Butler came before this committee on American activities, and their final report concluded, yes, there was evidence, because McGuire had written back and forth, corroborating not only by the newspaper reporter's testimony, but by his own written material that he sent back to Butler and other people that they acquired, that he was indeed checking out the fascist governments and how they were being built and how successful they are at running an efficient government. So when the committee adjourned without really doing anything after putting out all these facts, they were asked why. Why wasn't this carried forth? And the committee said, well, they had done their job. And now it was up to the Justice Department. That being said, the Justice Department was is something the president controlled. And apparently President Roosevelt didn't feel at that time, trying to emerge out of the Great Depression, was a good time to round up all these traitors and hang them. So he decided not to do nothing. And ultimately, I think that came back to bite the future for America, resulting in us becoming the top number one producer of armaments for the world, arming the world with our sophisticated weaponry, just as long as we don't make it too sophisticated for them. And we are in fact the military industrial complex up to the world.
People wanted security. I mean, the key word in the 30s, as now for that matter, was security. Social security, of course, health security. And Americans, I think, in the 30s cared more about security than they did about democracy. And so if a group of businessmen, with the help of some people, former military people or current military people, could have fairly quickly brought the economy back, created the sense of security, then yes, it is possible that they would have got some popular support.
America would have become a dictatorship. Democracy would have been gone. America would have joined Hitler and Mussolini as a fascist triumphant.
Very people who were cheering Roosevelt were people who this still majority of white Protestant Americans believed should not have any power at all in government, should be subservient.
American society was fracturing along racial lines as well as political ones, and the right was sensing a new power.
There were insurgencies we could call sort of proto-fascist, groups called the Silver Legion, the Silver Shirts, or the Black Legion. Most of these groups were continuing some of the themes of the Ku Klux Klan. And these groups often carried out vigilante violence against Catholic workers, black workers in some of the factories in the North. These groups had great aspirations to become much larger than they were. Some of them had aspirations to imitate what had happened in Italy and was happening in Germany.
I appeared before the Congressional Committee, the highest representation of the American people, under subpoena to tell what I knew of activities which I believe might lead to an attempt to set up a fascist dictatorship. The plan as outlined to me was to form an organization of veterans, to use as a bluff or as a club at least, to intimidate the government and break down our democratic institutions. The upshot of the whole thing was that I was supposed to lead an organization of 500,000 men, which would be able to take over the functions of government. My main interest in all this is to preserve our democratic institution. I want to retain the right to vote, the right to speak freely, and the right to write. If we maintain these basic principles, our democracy is safe. No dictatorship can exist with suffrage, freedom of speech, and press.
I, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, do solemnly swear that I will faithfully execute the office of President of the United States and will, to the best of my ability, preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. So help me God.
FDR's New Deal policies brought an increase in public work programs, more help for the poor, and the removal of the dollar from the gold standard.
Fascism was seen as a example to be learned from because it seemed like a quick fix. All you needed to do was get people to shape up.
You could have had a handful of the wealthiest people in the United States found guilty of treason and sentenced to death.
But I already have the official statement released by that committee when it reported back to Congress. Its members clearly had no doubt that a fascist coup was in the offing.
With Roosevelt not doing nothing at that point in time, he opened the door for this cabal to continue to hurt the people, hurt the leaders who would actually help us as the ordinary people. You had the JFK assassination, which was, of course, I'll go on to that in another talk. But you have the Twin Towers. That, of course, was another cabal happening. So the rich do all of this. They never seem to get caught. In fact, your local politics do all this, and nobody gets caught in local politics in general. Not quite as much money in local politics, but the same kind of thinking attitude that humanity puts forth towards the poor and the middle class. I mean, basically, they do it against each other. It's just amazing that we haven't destroyed ourselves. But, you know, that day may be coming. Hard to say. Hopefully not too soon. But this is the experiment. And we hope this has enlightened you somewhat. We know this is a little unorthodox the way some podcasts are set up. But actually, we think it's we're having a conversation. And you're welcome to contribute to it on Anchor, on Spotify. You can actually leave voice messages. They can be incorporated into our future broadcasts of comments if you like. Be sure to visit our sponsors and be sure to also think about contributing a monthly donation for our podcasts and our continuation and looking into the realm that most people don't know. I'm Dave Gregory, and be the change you want to see.